More than $25 billion paid out to creators, a platform of hundreds of millions of users worldwide, and a business so efficient it makes tens of millions per employee. OnlyFans is one of the most successful and controversial internet companies of the modern era, and it's made billionaires out of people you've probably never even heard of. Now, following the death of its secretive owner, Leonid Radvinsky, the spotlight is back on the platform and the system behind it. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Today on News Talk Daily, how OnlyFans went from a small London startup to a global empire, how the money really flows, and why even the revenue commissioners here are tracking what creators earn. I think there's something pretty fascinating about OnlyFans, not just what it is and how it operates, but what it represents. On one level, yes, it's simple, people just paying for content. But look closer and it does start to feel like something else entirely. It's a platform where your personality, but perhaps more so your body actually, becomes your product, where your relationships can be monetized and where attention isn't just currency, it's income. And that's why it matters, because OnlyFans didn't just disrupt the adult content industry. It quietly rewrote the rules of the internet. And along the way, it created household names and forged second and third careers for everyone from soap actors to elite sports stars. But the platform's success does raise uncomfortable questions too, like who really benefits? Who carries the risk? And what happens when a platform that's built on intimacy becomes one of the most profitable tech businesses in the entire world? Well, with me today is journalist Kate Henshaw, who's been taking a look at the history and the impact of OnlyFans for us. Kate, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you for having me.
So let's, I think, go back to the very beginning, because it was founded back in 2016 by Tim Stokely in London, but I suppose his vision for what it was initially is not where it ended up.
No, not at all. Actually, in the beginning, it wasn't envisaged to be this platform that was very focused on explicit content. It was really envisaged to be this platform where creators could sell themselves, but also sell particular advice or, you know, fitness tips. And then it kind of became this thing that I don't imagine Tim Stokely envisaged that it would be. And it did even initially ban explicit content. They didn't see this massive shift of traditional influencers, people who might have been when YouTube was very, very big back, and didn't see people moving over to it. And this is where explicit content kind of moved into the space. And it became a home. And there wasn't a platform before this for explicit content and for people to pay per video, pay per interaction, pay per message occasionally. And it took on a total life of its own. And it is very much what the platform has been known for since it became a more so of a household name as a platform. It didn't turn into the next YouTube or the next Instagram. It turned into a platform that is really for explicit content.
It was acquired in 2018 by Leonid Radvinsky, who I mentioned a little earlier, who died this week via this company called Phoenix International, right? And he did have a vision for this company, and he really drove the growth over such a short period of time. Bring us through how it became a global force.
So it became a global force, as you say, once Leonid Radvinsky acquired it. Particularly during the pandemic period, its profits surged from 5.6 million to over 430 million, and millions of users and millions of creators joined. Now, Leonid Radvinsky did have a background in explicit content. He had a sex cams website that he founded, and he had a background in various other aspects of the porn industry as well. So when he came in, you really did see this shift, and then it kind of exploded over COVID. I suppose it's understandable why it exploded over COVID. People stuck at home and people not being able to date. And that is an inference. But people did start to rely more on these things and rely on these internet platforms like OnlyFans for human connection. And in this case, for digital sexual connection.
But its success survived way beyond COVID.
Absolutely. It has gone way beyond COVID. And like you say, some of these stars have really become stars in and of themselves. Even people who've started on OnlyFans have become more mainstream household names, have moved actually from OnlyFans to other platforms, which is a really interesting aspect of it.
Now, today, it has 4.6 million creators on the platform and 370 million users globally. And Reuters has described it as a platform that fuses porn, social media and creator economy. That's how they describe it. And that is, I suppose, central to the success of OnlyFans, isn't it? Despite their efforts to try and broaden its image to be something other than that.
They've tried over the years. They even tried to ban explicit content in 2021, and there was severe backlash from it. It is their main profit driver, and it is their core revenue driver. They lifted the porn ban initially in 2017. Obviously, Redvinsky then took over in 2018. They then tried to ban it again in 2021, and there was immediate backlash. You would have seen it all over all social media platforms, creators coming out and saying, this is our livelihoods. You have created this platform to give us, and we have created these livelihoods out of this platform. You can't take it away now. And as we saw, that was very, very, very quickly backpedaled on within days, in fact. And not only from the creator's standpoint, but from a business standpoint, OnlyFans is totally dependent on these revenue streams. No one is going on OnlyFans for content purely related to sport. And that is why it is synonymous with the porn industry.
No, I don't think I've ever Googled OnlyFans plus fitness, OnlyFans plus comedy, OnlyFans plus sport.
Wellness.
Never in my life. Or wellness. It's not the place to go. And I'd like to point out, I don't go on OnlyFans at all. But obviously, as a journalist, I have clicked on it to get a sense of what this platform actually is and how it works. So for people who haven't been on it or haven't sort of got past the initial registration on the platform, what is it? What does it look like? What does it sell exactly?
So you can subscribe to certain creators. There is the subscription model fans can pay monthly. There's also additional monetization. So that includes tips, pay-per-view content, private messages, custom requests. And these kind of requests can be anything and everything, very innately sexual or seemingly innocuous things that might maybe are more related to people's kinks. You know, reading the phone book, everything from very explicit sexual acts using things like sex toys, like dildos and vibrators, to maybe saying a specific message that a paying customer wants to have read to them in a particular type of voice. It's really a pay for what you want kind of service. Now, there is obviously stuff on the surface as well. You can subscribe to somebody's page and just see photos or videos of them. Sometimes it is porn videos. Sometimes it's just naked photos. Sometimes it's photos in lingerie. There are levels to it, and different creators go down different streams and have different business models for it. But I suppose the real key thing here is that because the revenues are split 80% to creators and 20% to the platform, they have no reliance on advertisers. It totally sets them apart from other social media platforms. You know, every time you click on a YouTube video, unless you pay for YouTube Premium, there's sometimes 3, 4, 5 ads, depending on how long the video is. There's none of that on OnlyFans because people pay directly to the platform and to the creators themselves. There's a direct financial relationship. So it's extremely transactional in a way that other platforms just aren't.
And the revenues are split. 80% of the money goes to creators and 20% goes to the platform. And to give us, I suppose, a sense of how big the business has gone, give us a sense of the scale of it, we just have to look at the most recent figures that came out in 2024.
Yeah, so the 2024 figures, there was 7.2 billion spent by users, 1.4 billion in company revenue, and 684 million in pre-tax profit. So more than 25 billion has been paid out to creators since the launch of the platform, which is extremely significant.
And the thing that has really caught my eye about this, just from a purely business point of view, we'll come to the ethics of it in a minute, is as a business model, it is phenomenal because they have 40 or 50 direct staff working from OnlyFans, and yet, as you say, 1.4 billion in company revenue. I mean, it is money for old rope.
It's really, really significant and very, very different to other tech giants. So it generates about 37.6 million per employee compared to tech giants like Apple. They generate about 2.4 million per employee, and Nvidia generates 3.6 million per employee. So it's meant the platform has become really scalable. Creators produce the content, the users generate the demand, and it's a very transactional relationship. The core company really provides the infrastructure and the payments processor, but there's not a lot to keep the platform running because it is just that transaction, and that generates huge, huge profits.
Well, as you say, 40 to 50 staff directly on a platform that has 4.6 million creators and 370 million users is quite something. Right, I want to come to that man who was at the centre of this, who had a vision and who died this week. That was Leonid Ravinsky. He didn't found OnlyFans, we said that at the beginning, but he did make it what it is today. What else do we know about this guy?
Well, he was born in Ukraine and he was raised in Chicago. He does have that background in online porn, like I said, including early sites like Ultra Passwords. He founded this webcam platform called My Free Cams, which was a sex cam website. He bought OnlyFans in 2018 for an undisclosed price, so we don't actually know what he paid for it. Extremely private, extremely secretive. Very few even public photos of himself, which is really interesting and very, very different, again, to these other tech giants. And he was rarely even mentioned by company leadership. He's this really kind of shadowy, or was this really kind of shadowy figure. But we do know he paid himself 701 million in dividends in 2024 and over 1 billion in recent years. So he's a very rich man, even if he is very, very secretive. But his death does raise questions about the ownership of the company, future sales, strategic direction, where this is all going to go next.
Incredible to think that he was such a private individual running a platform that is all about making yourself, your body, your personality completely public.
These creators are the product and we know nothing about this man.
There is also a really strong Irish dimension at the top of this company, and we're really, I think, going to see this now more than ever, given the fact that Leonid Ravinsky has passed away. The CEO is Irish.
She is. She's a former privacy and security lawyer. It's interesting how she describes herself. I was doing some research on this and I didn't actually know she was Irish before. But she has described herself as a feminist publicly. And she has really done a lot of work to frame this platform as a platform for empowering women. She's even said that she wants her daughters to have a good online life. So that's really pushing back on a lot of the criticism that OnlyFans has gotten in the past. But very interesting that she is this Irish woman and her background being in cybersecurity, which would be quite important for a platform like this. I'd say she brings quite a lot of that experience to this role.
Her name is Kylie Blair. She was educated in Oxford, as you say. She is a lawyer by background. She's in her early 40s, as I understand it, and she calls herself a safety nerd, a cybersecurity nerd. She says she wants to ensure that her daughters have a good life online. And I don't really want to get into a whole segment on judging the rights or wrongs of a platform like this, but it is a platform that has become best known for selling sex. And there is a lot of controversy, isn't there? And a lot of divided opinion, Kate, on whether or not this is a positive thing or a negative thing. Where do you stand?
I think there are elements to it. I think in a world where sex work is always going to exist, I mean, it's called the oldest profession for a reason. It is good that there is a platform that pays directly out, that gives creators control over their output, that does have cybersecurity measures to stop content from being stolen. But you also have to take into account there is obviously exploitation here. You have very young women, very young girls on this platform posting this kind of content in their late teens, early 20s. And I don't know, in my late teens and my early 20s, I wouldn't have had the maturity level. I wouldn't have had the kind of wherewithal about me to engage in this. And then you have to think about the money aspect of it as well. A lot of these creators are making huge amounts of money, and that's very tempting and that's a very attractive prospect. So I think ideally this would be a platform that would be a vessel for sex work to be very controlled and to be a positive thing. And maybe we could get to a point where it was empowering in a world where sex work always exists. But as of now, and if you look at Leonid Ravinsky, his background is less than savory when it comes to the porn industry, particularly that cams website.
And we do talk about these people who've made this phenomenal amount of money on this platform. I heard one actually Irish creator saying she made over 20,000 in the first 24 hours, but there is a small percentage, I would say, making that level of money, and the rest of them are all competing, and it is deeply competitive. And that's a bit, I think, that would really worry me, because I think if you're on a platform like that where you can see there's the potential to bring in this amount of money, surely it is going to encourage you to push your boundaries as far as you possibly can, perhaps go way beyond them. And there must be a certain pressure on these people to sustain this type of content, to perform in a certain way. And I'm just not convinced that could be completely healthy for people. And there are musicians like Kate Nash, which maybe some of our listeners are familiar with, who say they go to this platform to supplement the earnings that she makes as a musician.
You have both sides of this. You have creators that are earning tens of thousands per month, and there are standout examples of people earning $1 million a month and up to $40 million in annual earnings. In an Irish context, sub-creators have reported earning up to €200,000 per year, which is a hugely significant amount of money. The majority do earn far less, and many make, you know, near minimum wage equivalents. Many do also use it to supplement their incomes, public figures, non-public figures. Some of these people do have regular jobs that they go to 9 to 5, and then they do this on the side. There are a few big winners here, and we know the names of those big winners.
And there are, I suppose, a few big earners who've got public profiles, and the content that they create isn't about sex.
Absolutely. I mean, especially nowadays, you have big earners, including established stars like Cardi B, Iggy Azalea, Black China, Amber Rose. You also have people that started on OnlyFans and then moved off it and started making money in other ways and through other forms of social media.
Perhaps unsurprisingly, given the nature of the content, there have been serious controversies.
Absolutely. Investigations have found cases of non-consensual content and allegations involving trafficking and abuse. There have also been moderation challenges, given that there are millions of uploads per month. This platform gets millions of uploads, and the companies claim that every post is reviewed by humans has been questioned by experts. The company has also been criticised for the use of outsourced moderation, including teams in Ukraine. And former staff have also alleged that high-earning creators are treated more leniently.
You've worked for a major streaming company in the past. I know that, Kate. How important is that active moderation, especially when it comes to adult content?
It's hugely crucial, and it's very, very difficult as well when you have this amount of content being put on a particular platform and the rate at which it's uploaded. It's really, really difficult to stay on top of it, but you have to, and the law requires it.
OnlyFans says it prohibits child sexual abuse material and modern slavery, including sex trafficking, and removes illicit content as soon as it is detected. Bring it back to Ireland for a moment. The revenue commissioners here, unsurprisingly, have started taking a look at people's earnings.
Yes, well, there has been a rapid growth in Irish creators using platforms like OnlyFans. At the end of last year, revenue was owed 3.3 million from the previous 5 years and was contacting around 450 individuals for compliance. It uses the platform's data and publicly available information to find these individuals, and it treats income as standard self-employment earnings.
That sounds like very straight revenue commissioner speak there, Kate. I know they've had to deal with some, I suppose, more unusual issues like, you know, expense claims that have been put in for things like lingerie and costumes and props and equipment and hotel rooms used for filming and revenues, trying to distinguish between what's for personal use and what's for business use. But it's just interesting, I suppose, to see the amount of money that they have taken from OnlyFans, because I was always a wee bit suspicious about the earnings that they said were coming from these websites, but that would suggest people are actually earning huge amounts of money here. Given Radvinsky's passing this week, he died from cancer, we understand it. What are industry and business experts predicting is next for OnlyFans?
Well, it could sell. There's a strong potential for sale, with a price of around $8 billion being mentioned.
That's the market value. That's what they suspect. Wow.
That's what they suspect. That's how much money this platform generates. But the fundamental challenge is, can it move beyond porn, or is that the foundation? Is that just what OnlyFans is?
Stepping back, do you think OnlyFans is a bit of a one-off? Do you think it will continue to generate the revenue and generate the hits and the interaction and the customer base going forward?
I think it probably will. I think it could have competition, though. I mean, if you see a price tag of $8 billion on a service like this, I could see other people moving into the market, especially when this seems to pay more than maybe more traditional porn sites and porn content. It's supply and demand. As long as the demand is there for it, people will buy it. And especially in the age of influencers, where you are the product, you are the service, you are the person, you are what these people are buying, I think it will continue to thrive.
Kate Henshaw, thanks so much for being here on News Talk Daily and doing that deep dive for us onto OnlyFans, a company that, I think it's fair to say, doesn't quite fit into any one box. It's a tech platform, it's an entertainment business, some would say. It's a social experiment, perhaps. It's made vast amounts of money, changing how people earn, certainly online, and forced regulators, including our very own revenue commissioners, to catch up. But bigger questions, I think, certainly remain about power and about control and about what happens when the most valuable thing you have is yourself. And that's for sale. That's it for today's News Talk Daily. You can email the show at newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on that. I'm Ciara Doherty. Thanks for listening.